Good morning, everyone. We're going to get the Health Science Committee meeting started. Could we have a roll call, please?
Chair DeBrava?
Here.
Vice Chair McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Moran? Regent Trachok? You have a quorum.
Thank you. And Winter, do we have anyone calling in as far as you know? Okay. We are going to go to item two, minutes. Oh, public comment. I'll do public comment first. Do we have any public comment here in Henderson? Seeing no public comment. And again, there's no hookup. So we will now go to item two, minutes. Do I have a motion, please?
I so move.
I have a motion.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any discussion regarding the minutes? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. I'm going to skip the chair's report, and we're going to go to item four, UNR School of Medicine report. Dean Schwenk, thanks for making it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom Schwenk for the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. You have a fairly detailed outline in front of you, but I'd like to embellish on several things. In the first section on general issues, I wanted to highlight, A, we are undergoing a major commitment to strategic planning and culture assessment and engagement, and we're bringing the two together in kind of a combined process. This is something that I think is a very exciting endeavor that follows our more focused strategic planning that took place for the LCME accreditation process and our site visit. So we hit that really hard related to the LCME. Now, kind of post-LCME, we are taking a much broader look at the whole next phase of growth of the school and areas of emphasis. It's been a very exciting process, a very invigorating process, widely engaging, lots of participation. And I wanted you to know about that. Item B, the review of curriculum, that actually is a formal phrase in which we are, as part of our bylaws and part of our curricular process, taking a very intense look, in particular, at the preclinical curriculum. And the reason for that is because of some of the pressures of the Step 1 exam. And this is more detailed than you probably want to know, but I think you should be aware that nationally, there is a major problem with the first step of the licensing exam that has become so important to the future of students and their match success that it has started to distort the curriculum. And so now students are responding more to the Step 1 exam questions and objectives and not so much to an individual school's objectives and testing processes. It's a national problem. Deans are all over the place in how they're responding to it, and we are taking this on and trying to learn some best practices. There are a whole set of events that I'll just highlight. Match Day is March 15th, a Friday. That's a national day, as you know. The reason I highlight that is because the very next day, March 16th, is our 50th anniversary gala event, and some of you are attending. We're most appreciative. I'll just comment that we targeted this event for 400 participants. Didn't think we had a chance of hitting that, and we sold out and beyond and had a wait list that we are still trying to work through. So we're very excited about the participation and the enthusiasm. 2 weeks after that, we are hosting the Western Region of the Group on Educational Affairs, the Organization of Student Reps, and the Group on Student Affairs. So there are three groups that come together, Student Reps, Student Affairs, and Educational Affairs. And it's our turn amongst all the Western medical schools, meaning sort of Denver West, to host this. It'll be about 350 participants in Reno for several days of meetings, major contributions by several of us in the school, including a plenary presentation that I'm giving. And we're very honored and very excited about that. The plans have come together very nicely. 3 days after that, or 1 day after that, our LCME report, our follow-up report, is due from our site visit and our accreditation over the past year. And there are a number of areas of monitoring that we will be reporting on. We're feeling confident about that. And then about 6 weeks after that is hooding. So from mid-March to mid-May, it's a pretty intense time in the school before I think I next see you. I wanted to highlight H. I have the honor of having been invited to give a couple major presentations, and I'm focusing on student wellness, physician well-being, medical student well-being, and aspects of that issue, and I'll be making a couple major presentations leading up to this national symposium in September. It's being hosted by Weill Cornell School of Medicine in New York, and I've been invited to a presentation there. Clinical practice developments. A is the big one, and it's related to B and C. We have formed what we're calling the Clinical Network Executive Committee, CNEC, which consists of our most senior school leaders, plus medical student leaders, GME leaders, two department chairs, and research leaders, and we're bringing that group together to manage our clinical footprint and our clinical destiny, if you will. So one of the many consequences of consolidating in Reno and having a school that's fully focused on Northern Nevada and fully devoted to Northern Nevada is the ability to really take charge of our clinical partnerships and our clinical destiny, and that's what this group is going to do. So we believe that we have positioned ourselves now to be sort of an honest broker and to have the freedom to partner with literally everybody in Northern Nevada. They themselves may compete amongst themselves, community health centers compete, hospitals compete, but we are partnering with literally every single entity in Northern Nevada, which we think is critical for our future. That relates to B and C. As some of you know, Northern Nevada Medical Center, which is a universal health system hospital that's actually part of the universal system here, but it's kind of an outpost in Northern Nevada, has announced plans to build a major new hospital in the south part of Reno. And that's going to change the landscape dramatically. Renown is the most dominant system now and will continue to be, but Northern Nevada is going to expand dramatically. I'm sure that will generate some competitive pressures, but we ourselves are going to partner at a high level with Renown, and we are exploring partnerships with Northern Nevada. So we're negotiating a letter of intent at the moment, and that will lead to possible GME partnerships as well as other relationships. So that's going to change, I think, for us, for the better, the opportunities to partner in Northern Nevada. And the reality is that I believe, I'm not sure the hospital executives believe this, but the reality is that there is such a crisis of access in Northern Nevada in essentially all specialties and for essentially all services, it's hard to imagine that both systems cannot be very successful in Northern Nevada. D, 2D relates to this strategy as well. This is our owned and operated part of our network, which is the major new facility that we have purchased, and we're deep into planning for renovations, deep into program planning, deep into a multi-specialty, patient-centric practice that will be developed there. And E, just to say that we're running a little bit ahead, we're making a modest profit at the moment in the practice plan, and that's a good place to be. Item 3, graduate medical education. I just wanted to highlight that the Alcove Family Medicine Residency continues to thrive, continues to grow. We've recruited faculty members, residents are placed, the partnerships are in place, the support is there, and that's doing very well. Pediatrics has been put slightly on hold for a bit. Renown has asked to just take a slight pause, and I think we'll continue to push ahead with the planning, but not as quickly as we had hoped, but it is still in play. And finally, with regard to research, I'll just highlight one major grant success. We secured another COBRA grant, the Center of Biomedical Research Excellence, COBRE, and we secured that grant in cardiovascular physiology. It's about $11 million over the next 5 years. Very exciting. They're big grants that support lots of different projects and also support the investigator the development of junior investigators, so it's a pipeline development as well. That's all great. The problem is we are out of space, and space for research has become a huge issue, and we actually have to develop some new plans for where we're headed in that regard, because we are pretty much completely locked at the moment, and that will inhibit our ability to continue to grow our research pipelines. B, just to say that we are still in process with the possible recruitment of a senior associate dean for research, but more exciting is C, kind of in parallel to this basic science research dean, the senior associate dean position, we actually had the serendipitous opportunity to recruit an extremely high-level associate dean for clinical research. This is Dr. Mark Riddle, who is now signed and in the process of full onboarding and credentialing. He is retiring from a 21-year career in the Navy. He's currently chair of preventive medicine at the Uniform Services School in Bethesda. He has personal reasons to move to Reno, and he just dropped in our lap. He is a global infectious disease and global GI disease expert who has very high-level connections up to and including the Gates Foundation. He brings a huge set of projects with him, mostly funded through the military, that will extend to other funding sources. And the most exciting part about this, he's an MD, PhD in public health, but the most exciting part about this is that we joined forces with the VA, and he actually will be jointly appointed as their Associate Chief of Staff for Research and our Associate Dean for Clinical Research, which is a huge new bridging between the two institutions. That relationship has gone extremely well in the last few years, but this is a whole nother level of partnership that we think is very exciting. It makes him eligible for funding from the VA as well as all the funding that he can secure from other sources. So that's a big deal. And that finally relates to D, which is that we have secured space for a clinical research center that will be sort of the focus for a whole wide range of clinical research activities. That's part of our focus. And I think, minus the medical student admissions data, which, Mr. Chair, you may want to discuss, because you requested that data some couple months ago, and I have those data if you want to discuss those as well. But minus that, that's my report.
Thank you, Dean Schwenk. Any questions or comments from the committee? Dean, I was going to ask a quick update on physician assistant program.
Thank you for that. Program is thriving. The first class is doing well, not to say that they're not totally stressed, because these are people who have been out in the healthcare workforce. Their average age is at about 29, if I remember correctly. And so they're coming back into a very intense 12 months of basic science education, and I think they are very stressed. I was not being facetious about that. They are doing well, however, and we're working through that in terms of advising and support. The admissions process for the next class to start this summer is just as intense, if not more so, than the first round. We thought that the first round was perhaps somewhat intense and high level of demand because of sort of a pent-up demand. So we had 1,400 applicants in the first year for 24 slots, and we thought that might back off this year. We actually had 1,800 applicants for 24 slots this year, so it's even more intense. We're looking forward to the new class. Once we get two classes in place, then there's more of a sense of a critical mass. This year's class then moves on to the clinical year of training this summer, but it's going very well in any case.
That's good to hear. And lastly, from my perspective, any update on philanthropy? How's that going? I don't know, with the 50th anniversary, and I just noticed your lapel pin there.
Yes, I'm.
Are those on sale in the gift shop?
Permanently branded.
As an alum,
for you, Mr. Chair, I'll make
it committee, you know.
Appropriate gift.
Tell me a little bit about philanthropy.
Yeah, I think the gala event itself on March 16th has generated a huge outpouring of support, and all of that support will go to scholarships. We have some more significant asks in play that I won't go into detail. But yes, I think it's going well.
Very good. Any comments, questions? Thank you for the update, Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
We are going to go to item 5, the UNLV School of Medicine report. Dean Atkinson, welcome.
Thank you. You may be sorry to have me. I have a terrible cold, and I apologize for that. I'm happy to tell you a little bit about what we're doing now. First of all, we've had about the same number of applicants for our School of Medicine that they had for their PA program so far this year, 1,900. We have interviewed over almost 300 students. We have one more day of interviews left. We have given out 58 of the 60 spots for our first class, so we have 8 left, and we're going to have a substantial wait list as well. We've had great students. It ended up at over 300 Nevada applicants, so that is really good, and that's really who we interviewed, and that's who we will be taking, either ties to Nevada or absolute residency in Nevada. In terms of master affiliation agreement with UMC Hospital, we're working on that. We've been meeting weekly with the UMC people. We are working hard on it, but I think we're going to have just an affiliation agreement and not a master affiliation agreement at this point. We have a four-hour session next week to really try to tie it up, because the goal would be to have this come to the board for approval at the June board meeting. So that has a deadline in April, and we have then a month to just get it ready. So we have a term sheet, and we are finalizing the strategic planning. In terms of the accreditation update, I'll do the right-hand one. That's easy. I'll do that one first. We got continuing accreditation for the residency programs. That's the GME programs. That's given by the ACGME, the Accrediting Council for Graduate Medical Education. And this was our first time getting continuing accreditation. We got accreditation before we took the residence about 2 years ago. We got that, and now we've gotten continuing accreditation. LCME is the liaison committee for medical education that accredits medical schools. You heard about Reno doing their report on their visit last year, a year ago. Our visit was this week. We have some things that we're going to have to monitor. We knew that was going to be the case because this was looking at the third and fourth year, and the third and fourth year hasn't started yet. So we give the plans to the site visit team of what we're going to do, how we're going to do career advising, how we're going to do monitoring of the curriculum, and what is going to be happening. And for that, you end up with continuing monitoring as something to look for. And so I'm sure we're going to have a list of those. We have some other areas that were concerns that were things that I would have expected, very few totally unexpected things, but we won't get a report from them until at least June. So we still have time to even appeal and review their summary, and so we'll be doing that between now and June. I don't think they meet till the end of June, so you won't even hear our LCME accreditation status until after the June meeting. In terms of UNLV Medicine, they have done an amazing job of doing all the compliance training for all of the faculty and all of the training that needed to be accomplished for the billing people and for the finance people and for everything that were part of the audit needs. We have also launched the patient access number and the patient access to appointments number. We're trying to expand the number of patient appointments. We're out telling people that our doctors have spaces available and guaranteeing some space, some time for patient visits. That is beginning to work. People don't like to wait a long time for their appointments. We have initiated the e-prescribing process, which is a very positive thing. And as well, we've got patient archival done through Centricity Business. We initiated patient satisfaction surveys as well. So a lot of things happening on the practice plan front. The finances, we already talked about in the last meeting, but if you have questions about that, I will have Michael Gardner come up, our vice dean, and talk to you about that. I was asked by Regent McAdoo to be able to talk about our rural education for GME in Winnemucca. And we're very proud of this program. It's very like the program that Reno has in Elko. Ours started earlier, so we have more experience with that. But the Accreditation Council for GME defines rural training as having at least 50% of their time in a rural site. Our residents, you'll see, spend actually 2 years of their 3 years in a rural site, Winnemucca. The way our Department of Family Medicine is organized is there are two pieces to it. There's the residency in Las Vegas and the residency in Winnemucca. They each have their own program director, and there's a site director for Winnemucca, and there's a site director in Las Vegas. And they do a lot of teleconferencing of all of the educational materials. Faculty at both programs participate in those conferences. They travel in between sites for a variety of things, so it's really been a very interactive program. For those of you that don't know Winnemucca, I haven't been yet, and I do need to go one of these days. Its population is not high, but the fact of the matter is their catchment area is huge, 10,000 square miles. It's a good city, and the Family Medicine Department enjoys working with them. So that the residency right now has five residents each year in the Las Vegas program and two residents in Las Vegas the first year of their program, and then those two move to Winnemucca for their third and fourth year, or their second and third years. So it's a typical rural residency program in that regard. It's called a one to two rural track. They do different things during the residency program. They do more specialty things in the first year because they're in Las Vegas and have access to more people during those years, more different kinds of physicians during that first year. But they still have a broad range of things that they have to do during the second and third year that require a fair amount of other people and other work. They do dermatology, for instance, and ophthalmology and a variety of the internal medicine kind of specialty things. But Winnemucca has been able to provide all the physicians that they need for those courses or to do it over the telecommunication for people that aren't located there. The Family Medicine Department does everything that you would expect a major department in a medical school to do. They have the clinical care and hospital piece and outpatient piece, but they provide education to medical students and residents, and it's very important that that education be connected, that our residents teach the medical students too. That's one of our accreditation requirements. They're very involved in community engagement and have been involved in the Winnemucca piece and the whole Humboldt Hospital piece. They do scholarship and research, and they're pretty good at the entrepreneurship part as well. But I thought I'd just point out the number of grant-funded projects that the Family Medicine Department has had. And the first couple of them were done under Reno, and so we thank them for what they did to set up this program in Winnemucca and for everything that they did to support this family medicine program in Las Vegas. Most recently, they've gotten a grant that was almost $900,000 to do a rural health network development, too. So it's good for the state overall and good for teaching doctors who will be practicing in rural areas of the state. So that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Dean Axon. Regent McAdoo.
Yes, I want to thank you for the report on Winnemucca. I actually went to Winnemucca a couple weeks ago and toured the hospital there, so I appreciate that very much.
I need to go, too, and I will.
Okay. It's a very nice hospital. But I really want to thank both schools of medicine for your service to rural Nevada. It's very meaningful to the residents and those communities, so thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Dean Atkinson, I did have two quick questions. One on the ACGME accreditation. What's the length of that accreditation? Does it vary by department or specialty, or is
no.
it all inclusive?
This is the one for the whole overall institution. And I don't know what the length of it is. Do you know? I think it might be 5 years, but it might be have increased to 8 years or something along
Thanks.
That line.
Thanks. And lastly, regarding philanthropy, any development officer yet? Is that still
no,
a search?
No, that's still
going
a search. It's been an active search, but we haven't really come up with a candidate that we're ready to offer to yet.
Any other comments or questions? I might take you up on that offer to have Dr. Gardner come up and talk a little bit about finances. We did have it in business and finance, but
since I'm going to be here, I'm texting Kate Martin, our Associate Dean for Graduate Medical Education. She'll text me back in a second. I'll give you that answer as far as the number of years.
Thanks, Dr. Gardner. And just for a few minutes, I know we touched on some of the finances. I was going to ask, what are some of the efforts that are you're doing to try to increase the patient volume or patient visits? Tell me what's going on there.
Well, one, we've there's several things, and I think I've described to you, Dr. DeBrava, and, Chairman DeBrava, I'm sorry, in private meetings, that this is like building a house. There's not one magic bullet. We're doing one brick at a time. We have expanded our templates, but, for example, in otorhinolaryngology or ENT, to my non-physician friends, we knew that one of the problems we had is that some of the contracts in the city were excluding us. So it took several months of me going and cajoling United Healthcare in particular, who is the biggest company in town, to say we knew that their managed care Medicare program, their members were waiting up to 9 months, 6 to 9 months to get an ENT appointment with the largest group in town. We are now the second largest group in the state as far as ear, nose, and throat specialists. We told them we'd get their people in 2 weeks. They said, you can't do that. I said, yeah, we guarantee you. Try us. Well, we don't know. So try us. Your members are complaining about how long it's waiting. Try us. We first saw that they said, you can't do that. Try us. We scheduled 25 people within 2 weeks. They said, okay, we'll try another 50. We scheduled another 50 within 2 weeks. All 50 took the appointment, except a couple people said, well, actually, I'm out of town. I didn't think you could be. Is it okay if it's 3 weeks? I said, your schedule. We got them in, and we've now scheduled another 100. That is a success story. It's not going to change the world for us. But then I went back to United Healthcare, and their chief medical officer happens to live 2 doors down from me. I said, all right, Lorraine, we proved that we could do it for ENT, and now I want pulmonary, and now I want GI, because we have capacity there. One of the other, Anthem has one of the second largest Medicaid managed care system in the state. We had the same conversation with them just a couple weeks ago. They said, you'll see our Medicaid patients? I said, we'd love to see your Medicaid patients. You know, that's part of our mission, and we're happy. So one of the ways is obviously to open up slots. We're doing that. But the other is to get the insurance companies to allow their members to come see us. As you well know from your practice, a lot of the plans are very exclusionary. I have conversations with our friends from Optum, Dr. Macbeth, and I have a meeting next week with Dr. Volker and his counterpart at Healthcare Partners about getting them to refer more to us. We have some other discussions that are early on that we think are quite exciting that if they move forward, I'm looking forward to talking to you about that in the future. We're in some early discussions about how we think we can do more in the primary care arena, which of course will then expand our referrals. So that's the answer is we're just, you know, frankly, I'm spending a lot of time going, knocking on a lot of doors and say, I know you support the medical school. The way you can show your support is not say that. The way you can show your support is let us see your patients and let us do a good job for you. And so that's a very long answer to your question, because it's not just opening up more appointments. We are doing that. But we also have to make sure that when we open up those appointments, there's patients to fill them.
Any other questions or comments from the committee?
I just have a general comment, actually, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind.
Please. Yes, Mr. Moran.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say, just in having been on the board now for
just having been on the board for the last 2 years and having been able to observe both schools, I mean, we, Mr. Chairman, we clearly have two of the best medical schools in the world, I truly believe. I had a sister that actually was educated at UNR's medical school and is successfully practicing in Scottsdale as an anesthesiologist, and her husband is also an anesthesiologist, and they've really provided a great quality of life for themselves, their family, and whatnot through UNR and the education she received there. To see and work with Dr. Gardner, to work with our dean, Dean Atkinson, on the medical school down here, I mean, what do I know about building a medical school? Nothing. Close your eyes. What do you see? But in terms of seeing the consolidation of information and the sharing of information between Dean Schwenk and his staff and the team that he's put on the field, and obviously Dean Atkinson and Dr. Gardner and the team that UNLV has put on the field is awesome. And I know that we've had our ups and downs with philanthropy and donors and the community and with, you know, new leadership as we've kind of gone down the road. And the practice plan was quite interesting. Our chair was instrumental in moving that seamlessly last year about the same time, if I remember correctly. But just in having sat back as an observer, as a resident of Nevada for the last 47 years, and to hear, I mean, I want to say I have my finger on the pulse of what's going on in the medical community, treatment-wise, and things are good, and it seems like things are going good. And to see all the hard work of all the people in this room, you know, day in and day out, I got to tell you, I really appreciate it, and I think, you know, keep up the good work, and however I can kind of fit in, connect a few dots, or maybe just get out of your way and let you all do what you are hired to do as CEOs and CFOs and COOs or administrative staff for whatever team you're on. I'm here. It's very easy to get in touch with me. So I just wanted to comment on that. I haven't had a chance to really say anything, but it's been extraordinary. And Dean Atkinson, I got to tell you, you know, your weekly updates to me on, you know, operations and philanthropy and what you're doing moving down the road. I mean, we clearly picked the right person to institute the school, and there are a lot of moving parts, and it is super, super sophisticated, and it seems to be well-oiled at this point in time, and I really appreciate it. I mean, it compromised the integrity of your health at some point in time without getting into any HIPAA violations, but that's what I know from reading the newspaper, at least. I really appreciate it and the good job that you and everyone is doing in this room. And Dean Schwenk, I hope you're paying attention. You're not sleeping, are you? You're listening astutely. Thank you for your time as well. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have.
And if I could just comment, I want to thank Jeremy Altop and his group and UNR has been very cooperative with us. I think that we have a very good relationship back and forth. Joanne Strobe, who's been a gift from heaven for me, works a lot with Jeremy as well. And so I think that the cooperation between the two schools is really good for the state.
I wanted to echo Regent Moran's comments. And Regent Moran, if you recall, I sort of reminded in the previous meetings that, you know, UNR School of Medicine, UNSUM, is celebrating its 50th anniversary. UNLV is 2 years, 3 years out of the gate, depending on what your starting point is. So we have a long way to go, and we know that. But we appreciate all the work that everyone's been doing to get this going. I was remiss, if you don't mind staying there for one more moment, Dr. Gardner.
My time is yours, sir.
Our new committee member, Regent Carvalho, I was going to let her say hello to the committee and see if she had any questions or anything to add or comment.
Thank you. I don't really have much to add. I don't come from the medical field. I've got some personal stories to tell if you ever want to hear them. But I appreciate all the work that's been done as somebody who's been in Southern Nevada for a really long time, a resident of Nevada. I know that the challenges to the medical field have been, at times it felt insurmountable, and hearing the testimony and the collaboration between these two schools is heartening, and I'm excited for the future of Nevada. I think that we're on the right track, and I'm proud to be a small part of that. So thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. My final comment is we're looking forward to match day for both schools, whether it's the residencies in Southern Nevada, because it's too soon for match day for any graduates yet of UNLV School of Medicine. They're only in their second year. And, of course, for the undergrad and the residencies in Reno. Thank you very much. That ends that item. We will go to item six, UNLV Project Focus. Dr. Joshua Baker, if you'd introduce yourself. Excuse me, one moment.
For the record, it's 10 years. I thought it was 10 years, but I didn't want to say. So the accreditation for ACG is 10 years.
Thank you for that.
Okay. Well, is it working?
Hit green button.
Green button. There. All right, thanks. I'm new to this, if you can't tell. Here. My name is Josh Baker. I'm an associate professor of special education at UNLV. And I'm here to just present a project, kind of changing pace a little bit, a project that we have in the College of Education called Project Focus, which stands for Forming Occupational and Community Understanding for Success. It is a post-secondary education program for young adults with autism and intellectual disability. An interesting story related to the medical field is during my time as an undergraduate and master's student at Marshall University, I had to do internships with a help center is what it was called, and it was created for students in med school who had learning disabilities. So a lot of what I tried to bring here to UNLV was things that I learned during my time at an internship. That program was started in the early 80s there. When I left Marshall University around 2002-ish, they had started a program for autism there, which still exists. So there's some relation to the medical field there, which was cool. It was started by an MD there at Marshall. So I'm new to this thing as well. But hopefully you'll have some questions at the end here. But the reason for these type of programs is because individuals with intellectual disability and autism are underemployed. These are employment rates that I have on the slide here, 8 to 23%, depending on what research study you may be looking at. If they are employed, they're typically underpaid due to the federal law, Section 14C, we can pay them sub-minimum wage. My favorite story is I met a young man with an intellectual disability pretty recently, and this happens everywhere. He drove himself. He learned how to drive. He drove himself to the sheltered employment. He worked 18 hours a week and made $31 a week. So this happens every day. So kind of these type of programs just help spread the awareness that they can do much more. If you can learn to drive, you can learn to work, at least make a minimum wage. Sometimes we see these individuals used as full-time volunteers. Again, I think this is breaking labor laws, but I've met individuals who may have Down syndrome that work somewhere. The business thinks they're doing good. However, the individual's volunteered for 20 years and never been paid while the workers are sitting back not working. So again, it's just trying to raise awareness. Many of our students, not all, want to go to college. So this is not a one-size-fits-all program. This is only a snapshot of what we need in the community. I work with the local ABA providers as well. We still have waiting lists in the ABA world for the young children, but we forget what happens to these individuals when they get older. And in Nevada, we really need to start thinking about that. And there's a few little programs here and there, so this is just a drop in the bucket what we're doing at UNLV. If they are given a chance to go to college, I have sometimes they're not given the proper supports. So that's our goal, is to develop these proper supports for our students. Just to show you a little bit is that when I've presented this probably hundreds of times in the community across the state, people think this is a novel idea. It's not. There's a national coordinating center for these type of programs. Now, at Marshall University, I worked with students with learning disability. These are for programs that may, for students with intellectual disability and autism, that may not graduate with a regular high school diploma. So they would come as non-degree-seeking students and receive a certificate. So there is a national accreditation center. this is new across the U.S., new as in like 2004-ish, and we are part of the pilot working on accreditation. So I was trying to write down words that was thrown out a second ago. So there is a team working on accrediting these programs so they're a little tighter across the nation because it is loose right now. The goal is that we provide post-secondary options around academics, independent living, self-determination, career development. Why did we all go to college? To get a job. That's our number one goal, is to work around that employment. So we may use person-centered planning and structure their program to what they would like to do. Dr. Rhodes and Mrs. Rhodes is with me, and their son, Clayton, was the first student with Down syndrome at UNLV that helped us start the program there. So he wants to work at Lifetime Fitness. It changes quite often, as everyone changes when they're 22 years old, right? So we have him a job internship at the Student Rec Center at UNLV. So we try to get these job internships to then reach, so they can reach their ultimate goal there at the end. Our goal is competitive integrated employment. I've sat on the state competitive integrated employment committee through the governor's office, trying to change some of these initiatives here in Nevada to hold higher standards. A little bit of data about these type of programs that we have here in Nevada is that from the preliminary data that we do have, those students that complete these programs are 70% more likely to be employed. So it's pretty good data to show that they are able to get employed when completing these. I will say that we teamed up with UNR. We're not in competition on this because it's a need across the state, and we applied for a federal grant just to show you that the feds recognize this. I'm going to tell you the exacts. We scored a 105.33. The winning score was a 105.33. So we lost in a tiebreaker. In 2015, that was a $2.5 million tiebreaker. So just to show you the feds, there's money for these type of programs. The next grant competition is in 2020. I think we're setting pretty good. One thing with me, as well as Mary Bryan at UNR, we sat on the national, they call it State of the Art Committee, and we're going to have the national conference here in Nevada next year for these type of programs. So that shows you that the nation is looking at us in Nevada and what we're doing here with these type of programs. So my next slide, these are more like general what I hear across the nation. Remember, there's 265 recognized programs. There's probably 300, 400 more across the nation. All of these programs just have to build an awareness. We have these negative stereotypes for this population. You know, they can't do this, they won't do this. Maybe doctors tell them at an early age, hey, your son has Down syndrome, they're never going to be able to do this, they're never going to be able to do that. Well, it's not true. They can and they will. So building the awareness has been an important part of the program. I've had families take our flyer from Project Focus and go to their elementary school and say, this is what we're working towards, okay? Also during that is it allows families to plan financially. It's expensive. College is expensive. I dread when my daughter goes to college. So we want families to plan financially because there is an extra fee added to these programs as well right now. Some of these programs across the nation where they've really built awareness, they get funding from the state. So they've really lobbied at the state level to where some funding will come that does help out. I think that conquers that particular slide. So then our last slide that we had was that there are federally recognized programs. The last I checked, I think it's up to about 83. I could be wrong. But there's only 75 federally recognized programs. These are called comprehensive transition programs. What's amazing is that we have two in the state of Nevada, UNR and UNLV, out of 75 in the whole United States. What this allows us to do is our students receive financial aid just like everybody else. The type of financial aid you do not have to pay back, so typically in Pell Grants, because it would be unethical otherwise. So even though they may be auditing the classes towards their certificate, audit meaning they're not taking it for a grade, those audits still count towards the certificate that they're working towards, and they receive financial aid. We have one student right now, just so you see we're reaching the socioeconomic status of our valley, we have one student that received $6,000 in financial aid this past year, which is pretty cool. Who would have thought, and he was told he would never be able to go to college. So it's pretty neat that we have that here, and, you know, it just shows that the feds recognize it. Now, one barrier that I have and part of the awareness that I do is that other agencies across the state or whatever will disagree with what I'm saying right now, but they're wrong. So it's just trying to build the awareness of this is true. And I think it's so new. You all have seen it over the years. Any type of new type of program, it takes a while for everybody, for everything to catch on. So we're in the very new phases. Recently, there was an article in Forbes magazine where the retired University of Missouri president wrote an article about these type of programs and basically said, if you don't have one of these, get one. Some of my doc students are being recruited to start programs across the nation. What's cool is us in Nevada, we're ahead of the game. We've been doing this for 4 years at UNLV. UNR's been doing it for 4.5. The federal grant that we lost wrote Nevada State in, as well as CSN, as well as Truckee Meadow. So our goal was to build programs across the state. So this is really a collaborative type of program and project that we want to grow. Because believe me, there's a need in this state for this population. I was reading these slides to my wife. What's my time limit here? And she's like, what does that last bullet mean? And it was just me trying to show that it's a recognized certificate. So through the university system, our financial aid person submitted this federal paperwork for us. So it's recognized by the U.S. Department of Ed, located on the eligibility and certification approval report. And if you print that report out, Project Focus Certificate falls right in between gerontology and quantitative psychology. So it's a recognized certificate. That's what I was going for in that bullet. It's in there. It's in that book. Let's see, everybody laughing at me. Other things I noted, just because the research is important as we go on our Tier 1 mission, as well as our new status, which is pretty cool. We have a number of peer-reviewed research out of this. I sat on the new Journal for Inclusive Postsecondary Ed, so I'm a journal editor within that. We have had a number of dissertations from other disciplines, which is cool. So communication studies, workforce development, and special ed, of course, has been conducting research there. We also have some grant opportunities as a kind of proposed as well. So that's kind of the snapshot. I'm sure there's a lot of questions. I'm not sure if we can have Dr. Rhodes.
Yeah, speak. Dr. Baker, yes. Thank you for that presentation. And I wanted to see if any committee members had a question or comment. Regent Carvalho, please.
Number one, this may be a little bit off the subject, but I didn't realize that the pay structure for workers with disabilities is not included in our mandatory minimum wage requirements for regular employees. I find that awful, and there's a opportunity for advocacy there for sure. I was wondering also, how many students are in your program at UNLV, and do you know how many are at UNR? And also, do you partner with Opportunity Village at all?
Well, that's with first your question with the 14C might answer your later question. So look to see who are 14C providers. Those are the people that are paying subminimum wage. So then our numbers at UNLV, we have 25. We started with one, Clayton Rhodes. We started very grassroots. We wanted to keep the quality as we grew. We needed to sustain. We had support from UNLV and the College of Ed, but we needed to sustain, so we are at 25 right now. At one time, we had a waiting list of about 25. Our waiting list could really grow if we marketed the program, so this is no marketing at all. It kind of shows you the need. So we'll be able to stay at 25 for right now based on our staff and what we can handle. UNR, I think she also has around 20 to 25. I don't want to speak for her, but recruiting there is a little harder. However, she's grown it pretty good to be in a smaller area than we are here in Las Vegas. Our community partners, UNR is able to, you know, they partner with vocational rehabilitation. There's all kinds of braided funding for these type of programs. We just have to get people interested and agencies interested to help us. There's a dual license or dual partnerships with the school districts, helps pay it through IDEA Part B, vocational rehabilitation, our Desert Regional Center. There's a lot of ways that we could braid the funding, but we have to, you know, just kind of collaborate, work together, build the awareness.
Yes. Dr. Baker, if it's okay with you, yeah. I know John Rhodes and Shelley Rhodes and Clayton Rhodes, and I wondered if John wanted to make a few comments about the program and sure. When it's done for Clayton.
Good afternoon, and I'm a UNR Medical School graduate also, so it's great to be here and hear about the universities. And I say that because when our son was born 23 years ago, even being a physician, knowing he had Down syndrome, which we didn't know till after he was born, we didn't know what his future was going to look like. Even as a physician, people thought I should know, but I really didn't. But I did know one thing. I didn't want the limits that his diagnosis or that society would put on him to demand, to impact what his future was going to look like. And Shelley and I have spent really all of his life trying to break down those barriers and create opportunities, not just for Clayton, but for everybody else within the community that had some type of intellectual disability. So it was 6 years ago that we got to meet Dr. Baker. We had helped start a program at one of the local private high schools so that students with intellectual disabilities could have a fully inclusive middle school and high school experience. And with our experience there and hearing about Dr. Baker and his desire to start a program, people connected us and aligned it, and we were able to get the program going. Clayton not being here is really a reflection of the success of the program. He had class today. He won't miss class. I think he probably makes more of his college classes than almost every other college student. He also works today, and he's not going to miss a shift at the Student Rec Center working. So his not being here is really a reflection of his success. He takes about 12 credits a semester. He's worked as the student trainer for the women's volleyball team. He's worked in the equipment room for the UNLV football team, and he now works about 15 to 18 hours a week in the Student Recreation Center. He also lives in the dorms and lives independently, so he's out in the dorms. He eats in the dining commons. Last night we called him. He says, sorry, can't talk. I'm out watching the women's basketball game with my friends. He's also represented our university at a national level. He went to the state-of-the-art leadership program and represented UNLV at that. He also has represented UNLV in Think College. He has been one of five teams, he and Carl, who will be going to Think College in Washington, D.C. They were five teams selected from across the country to go to that. And as part of that, they have a one-year project through it, and he'll be meeting with the congressional representatives and the other five teams from Think College in Washington in April. I also like to think, as UNLV has touted its diversity, which is really important part of that university. Many times we forget about disability as being an extension of diversity and adding diversity to the university. So I'm so excited that UNLV has extended that and really been welcoming of this program. To finish out, I just wanted to share a couple of things. When Clayton was in eighth grade, in his eighth grade yearbook, his goal Excuse me. Did not think that was going to happen. His goal was to sit in the student section at UNLV and root for his Rebels. And if you guys sit at any UNLV basketball game, you're likely to see him in the section or on the big screen rooting for his Rebels. I don't think you'll find a bigger fan. What's interesting now is you ask him as he's about to graduate, you ask him what his goal is. It's to pay taxes. Which really aligns with what our goal has always been, is we've always wanted him to be a contributing and valued member of our society. And it's through programs of what, like Josh is putting together and helping at UNLV, that he's going to be able to do that. So he graduates in May. And to watch him go across the stage and accept his certificate, it's going to be more than just for Clayton to do that. It's going to be recognition of the university and of Josh and his team and all the people that put together the ability for him to get through this 4 years and really do what we wanted for all of our kids, and that's to be like their peers and have a chance to contribute. So thank you for your time. Thank you for learning about Project Focus. We wanted you to be able to know about it and some of the great things that are happening at the university. And thank you, Dr. DeBrava, for giving us a little bit of time today in your committee.
Well, John and Shelley, thank you for sharing your story with us. And thank you, Dr. Baker, for giving us awareness of this program at UNLV. And UNR has a similar program. So it was very worthwhile. And any questions or comments from the committee?
No, but it deserves applause. Oh.
Thank you.
We will now go to item 7, new business. Vice Chair Geddes had some new business for us. We weren't doing enough work.
I don't know how to work these things. Sorry. Chair DeBrava, I just wanted to say that Board Chair Page and Chancellor Riley and I got an opportunity to go visit Apple and look at what they're doing with technology in the hospital here, the med school here at UNLV, and there were a lot of other opportunities to explore, and we just wanted to see if we could get an update as to what the two medical schools are doing with technology and explore future things that we could do.
Any other new business for health sciences? Seeing none, we'll go to public comment. Any public comment here in Henderson? Seeing none, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you.